Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, hello there. Welcome to WTA Weekly. I'm joined by sort of renowned sports broadcaster Marcus Buckland for this episode. Marcus, how are you doing?
Well, I love to be referred to as renowned, so thank you very much indeed for that. I'm well. Bit of a late night last night, so if I sound ever so slightly croaky, Nick, I apologise in advance. But, you know, having done a 20-mile run this morning, everything's fine. Ticking. Ready to go.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're working well, Marcus. And yeah, hey, look, we've all been there. It's like no pressure to get up early on a bank holiday, right?
Exactly. But, you know, the sun's shining, which is a pleasant change. There's no wind. You know, there's that hint of spring. The grass court season's not too far away. So it's a better time of the year to get out of bed and embrace whatever's coming your way.
Absolutely. Right. I will take wherever you're at with the sun shining, because I can't say the same here where I am based, all the way up in the middle, slap bang in the middle of the UK.
that's why you've got to live in the south. It's the only advantage. We get much more sunshine. I tell you, it's bursting through the clouds as I speak. It's paradise. Paradise in West London is how I would describe it right now.
If John were with us, he'd probably be showing off sunny Portugal, which is where he is at the minute, bringing all the coverage from Estoril Open on the ATP side. But we're not here to talk about the ATP. We're here to talk about the WTA. And I'm going to assume that you were up late last night celebrating Danielle Collins' win, right?
Well, I have to tell you, and this is not just trying to be clever, but I've been a huge Danielle Collins fan for quite a long time. And I honestly thought that her best days were behind her. I know there aren't so many days now on a tennis court as a professional ahead of her. But what a fantastic week. I just love that persona, the charisma that we all know about. Anyone who's either watched her on television or better still seen her in the flesh just knows that she brings something to the court. Bit of an ice maiden, a little bit terrifying at times, but so likable. And, you know, what an amazing week. I certainly did not tip her to become the Miami champion. You know, I don't think it's going to change her mind. She's already said it's not going to change her mind in terms of her retirement plans. But if she's going to head off into the sunset shortly, she's left some wonderful memories from the past few days.
Oh, yeah. This is almost the perfect way to go out, right? You go out still knowing that you can show your best. I do like what you were saying about sort of her charisma and who she is on court, because yeah, look, she was absolutely lovely in that winner's speech, but when she's on court, she is very fiery, very open about how she's feeling sometimes. And yeah, it's kind of like how maybe us amateurs in whatever sport we play feel like we are when we're having certain days on the court, if we're really dedicated to what we're trying to do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, but I don't think she ever really goes over the top. Sure, there's that menace, that sense that something really could happen here, but it's very rare, if at all, that I feel she's been unacceptably aggressive or whatever you might want to say. There's just that warning sign, and if you're on the other side of the net, you're thinking, oh, goodness, man, there's a net between us, actually, because and I don't mind that. I think you've got to bring whatever you need to bring to whatever you do, as long as you don't step over the mark. And we all know there are players that occasionally do that in all walks of life, whatever sport it may be. I don't think she can be accused of being over the top in that regard.
Definitely not. And you can tell that from how well liked she is. I think what's been interesting around this Collins win is how well received this title is. This is not just scrappy underdog win, partly because how impressive her CV is anyway. She's already a Grand Slam finalist. She's won a couple of titles. This is not one of those out of nowhere wins that maybe someone like a Elena Vezhnina was in Indian Wells 2017 or Flavia Panetta winning the US Open. This is someone with a very much an established pedigree. But I have to say the reaction that I've seen was overwhelmingly positive. This has to be the most feel-good title we've had on the WTA side for a while.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. We all know that she's had health issues. That's, of course, the main reason she's going to have to call it quits at the age of 30. She wants to go off and have a family and all the rest of it. And her colleagues and her friends on tour will know everything that she goes through because of the health issues. So that explains to a large degree, I think, why it's such a popular victory. And the other thing, you're quite right. I mean, she has won titles before. I was really surprised, just, you know, double checking the stats. That is only the third career title that she has picked up. First since 2021, obviously the biggest of her career as well. Yes, she reached the Australian Open final in 2022. But I must say, I was a little surprised that she hadn't picked up a few more titles along the way. And therefore, that's all the more reason to be so pleased that she has triumphed in such an emphatic, memorable manner in Miami.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's why. Yes, exactly. Why that she's so popular. And I think in many ways this is really good timing for her to end her career, because if she's not fully enjoying it but still playing well, it's better to finish now than to kind of drag it out and enjoy it less and less.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a difficult one. You know, she was making comparisons all through the week. The questions were coming after every single match. Why are you retiring, this, that, and the other? And she was saying, well, if I was a bloke, I wouldn't be getting these sorts of questions. And then I liked, actually, at the end of the week, she said, no, I accept why these questions are being asked, and they're coming from a good place. You know, you can make a comparison with Andy Murray, who's been fielding off questions about his retirement for a very long time. The one thing I would say, and I think, you know, I would be the last person to question why she's deciding to retire. She knows, and it's her right. But as the likes of Andy Murray have proved, it's a huge step, because once you do hang up those rackets, okay, sure, you can maybe try and come back, but it's very rare once you go away that you come back to the same degree. I mean, it's a big decision, because, you know, you've now got the rest of your life to lead. So these are hugely significant days for her. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to go out like that. Is she, I think, the lowest ranked player to win Miami? I think that the last lowest was Kim Clijsters back in 2005. She was 38 in the world at the time. Danielle outside the top 50. She's going to go flying back up the rankings as well. Also, the first American winner since Sloane Stephens in 2018. So she was flying the flag for the host nation, and, you know, lovely images of her success. Yeah, I mean, you got it spot on. It's one of the most, if not biggest, feel-good wins on the tour for a very long time.
Tell you what, it's going to really build the hype for her US Open campaign when it comes around, sort of after Wimbledon.
Yeah, I mean, can we possibly start to delve into the realms of fantasy and see that maybe her last ever match is the US Open final? Okay, then the questions start coming. Danielle, what are you doing? You're going to have to change your mind here, but let's see. There's a lot of tennis to be played before that happens.
I think there's almost this mentality with fans is that sort of when we, partly from observation of players, that we kind of assume they only stop, that they're kind of that level of dedicated, that they will only stop when their body tells them to stop, like Rafa and Andy and Roger, or when they simply can't compete anymore. They can't reach that level anymore. And some of that's to do with physical, and sometimes it's the way the game's moving on. But maybe it's also because maybe fans are super obsessed with the sport, and that's kind of, you know, why would there be anything other than sporting reasons to stop? But anyway, maybe Collins is looking at Ash Barty and sort of what she's done. Obviously, Barty, the one who beat her in that Australian Open final, and arguably what would have, even though she was the top seed then, the bigger feel-good story in that match. Barty stopping because she wasn't enjoying it anymore, and moving on and sort of having a family and maybe starting to pick up golf, but sticking to Australia and having a bit of a quieter life. And maybe she's looking at that and going, well, if Ash can do that, then I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult, I think, for us mere mortals who sit at home going, oh, I'd just love to be a top-class professional athlete, traveling the world, making lots of money, winning matches, receiving the adoration of spectators wherever you go. But of course, it's not like that. And I've spoken to so many players. It's tough. You have got to sacrifice everything, the physical training. Of course, we can share their moments of glory on a tennis court, and Danielle had plenty of those during the past few days. But we're not there with them in the gym every single day. We're not there with them when they lose matches that they expect to win at the start of a week and have to go home and deal with all the disappointments, the ups and downs. I think of a tennis pro more than any other sport are quite something. You know, you're victorious on a Monday, you've lost within 24 hours. I always remember Annabelle Croft, my dear friend Annabelle Croft, you know, wonderful junior player, won junior Wimbledon, won junior Australian title, got inside the world's top 20 when she turned pro. And it's a different world back then. She was traveling on her own to a large degree, but she did not enjoy it. And she said that every day she went out onto the court and she felt as though she was having an argument with her opponent, an argument in public. And mentally, never mind physically, mentally, she found that very draining. And it is, it's a brutal sport in so many ways. And that is why I will always respect the decision of any player if they decide to, quote, turn their back on it. I mean, I'm still 2 years on, actually, from Miami when we got the news that Ash Barty had retired. I still cannot quite believe that she's not at the top of the game, and I miss her. And I think the sport has suffered because the rivalry she'd have enjoyed with the likes of Iga Świątek over the past couple of years would have been absolutely fantastic. But that is entirely her right. The only time I get annoyed is when you see certain players with all the ability in the world who don't appear to be respecting what they have and are not necessarily, I think, giving what they could. And I'll throw the name Nick Kyrgios into that particular discussion, because that's the frustration, that sense of a waste of real talent. But that's not the case with Danielle Collins. And good luck to her with whatever she does once she does retire.
I think that's, I think you're absolutely right there. And, you know, that was the same name that popped into my head as well. Benoit Paire as well on the ATP side. But, you know, when you were saying that, actually, I can't think of any examples from the WTA side of people who maybe didn't put in as much effort as they could have. There might be examples, but I don't think they quite had the same kind of peaks as those guys did. Mm. Maybe that's something, it says something about the product or the WTA that, you know, everyone's, maybe because everyone's got a chance, everyone's trying.
It's funny, actually, you should say that. I mean, and this is sort of not necessarily connected, because both of them had the most astonishing careers, and both actually were champions in Miami. You look at Serena, I think, won Miami 8 times. Venus won it 3 times. And their longevity and their success is unquestionable. There were those periods in the middle of their career. And again, maybe I can understand it, because they were looking to, you know, to save themselves, to ensure that they could go on for as long as possible. And it wasn't that they weren't trying, but it was just frustrating when there were periods in a season when they wouldn't be there. And you think, come on, you know, I mean, you're the biggest drawing attractions. You can't argue because of what they achieved. And again, I think that's a further reflection of all the demands that we can't appreciate. But as a tennis fan, I always want the best players to turn up every week. And I get frustrated when you'd hear, for whatever reason, that one of them wasn't going to play during that particular week.
Yeah, I don't remember too much of that that period, but obviously, yeah, like that 2006 season I'm thinking of in particular, where, yeah, Venus and Serena didn't play. Although, was that at the same time they were having some kind of family issues at that point? Or was that different?
Yeah, well, listen, and that's why it's a more general point, and it's not just the Williams. It's whenever a top player cannot play for whatever reason. Yeah, there were things going on behind the scenes. We know there were particular political issues when it came to Indian Wells as well. So, you know, it's just, I think as fans, we understand that we want to see the best every week. But realistically, of course, that's not possible.
Yeah. And we see that. I mean, even day in, day out, when the top players do show up, you know, there's the expectation that they're going to be like some kind of superhero, ready to rock. And actually, no, they're going to come in not 100%. And it's only the people who have really perfected some kind of regime that's able to do that, or their base level is good enough to get them through a draw, where you kind of see repeated prolonged success. Just to finish off on Danielle Collins, appreciate you might not have necessarily watched sort of the whole of Miami. You know, you've got other sort of broadcasting opportunities that you need to prepare for and work on. From what you see, if you saw, I mean, from see if it matches up from my perspective of how she won that title. It was basically the 2 weeks of her life, and everything just worked.
Totally. I mean, you look at some of the players she had to see off. I mean, Caroline Garcia obviously is rediscovering some of her best form, and Coco Gauff would be the first person to tell you just how good she is. We all saw the year before last, second half of, what was it? I lose track of the years now, 2022, when Garcia went from, you know, not hitting a ball into court to becoming champion in the WTA finals in Texas. When she's on song, she's absolutely fantastic. You know, she beat Alexandrova, who again was on fire, having just seen off Iga Świątek. And I mean, I love Elena Rybakina, and we know what she's done at Wimbledon. We know that she got to the final in Miami last year. So the challenges kept on coming. You could not say that the draw opened up for her. Well, to a slight degree, I guess it did, because she could have had to play Gauff and Świątek, but the players she still got were very, very tricky, and in some ways almost trickier, because it put a little bit of extra pressure on her as an American. You know, oh, now you should win this one. So I was so impressed with everything that she did. And as I mentioned at the start, I just love her modus operandi. So yeah, it was one of those dream passages that you know, the top players get every now and then, and you can't expect it all the time, and that's why it's all the sweeter. And you know, you look at that run through, yeah, fantastic for her.
Really, really good quality players there, like every single one. You know, there's some of them have really, really strong CVs. They, you know, they are Grand Slam champions, Masters 1000 finalists, WTA finals champions, up and coming players with a lot of potential. They are I couldn't agree more. And the way she dismissed them, look at those score lines, like That first set with Rybakina was the toughest set she had to play, other than the first set of the tournament, which she lost, which is incredible. And regardless of whether she had to play Świątek and Goff or not, she still had to play Rybakina, who is one of the elite group of four who are at the top of the WTA in the current landscape. So that's, you know, if you have to beat one of those, that's the barrier. That's the barrier to breaking through and winning a title on tour right now.
Yeah, and let's also remember, Nick, that she hadn't actually beaten a top five opponent, I think I'm right in saying, since San Diego in 2022, and that was Paola Badosa when she was at the peak of her powers. So she could be forgiven as she got towards the end of the week for just having a little bit of self-doubt. You know, it's you're human in the back of your mind. Well, you know, I haven't had a lot of big wins here. This is piling the pressure on. So she had to deal with a lot of mental as well as physical barriers to get to where she did. And that's why it's all the more impressive.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Indeed. So, Collins, story of the week, not going to be anything near that in terms of hype, but there were other stories, and let's talk a little bit about Rybakina. What were your expectations of Rybakina going to this tournament? Because obviously we heard how ill she was in Indian Wells, didn't even take to the court for about 8 days. Was the final above and beyond what we were expecting, or about right?
Do you know, when it comes to Helena Rybakina, I'm so mystified. She's such an enigma. And, you know, that's because of her personality on court. She gives absolutely nothing away, you know, which is a great strength. She mixes pure brilliance with those unfortunate, more than unfortunate, those bizarre unforced errors that can creep in. You know, she was in the final last year. She's won a Grand Slam. She knows what to do at the highest level. But I thought that match that she had with Victoria Azarenka was for me one of the best matches I have seen for a very long time. I mean, it had absolutely everything. And you saw it, you know, how she won the first set. She lost 16 points in a row in the second set against Victoria. No change in the demeanor. She's up in the deciding set. She's serving for the match. She then, I think, loses three games in a row to take it into a tie break. And then I think, you know, as I tweeted, I hope I get my stats right, she then reeled off the vast majority of the deciding points towards the end to get through. I love that match. I've always been a big Victoria Azarenka fan as well. I thought that had absolutely everything. And it kind of summed up Rybakina, who's a wonderful player. I also really like the fact that she gave a great interview afterwards. And a couple of times when I've been traveling on the tour over the past year or so, and I think it all stems from the fact, well, two things, the political situation, but also indirectly because of the political situation, I don't think she feels she was given the respect that she deserves for winning Wimbledon, and she sort of shied away from giving her opinion, but actually she's got a lovely demeanor as well off the court when a microphone is thrust into her face. So I think, yeah, of course she's going to be disappointed that she lost the final. I think it's another really good week for her, and I only see her getting better.
Yeah, so we think we've got obviously she's got a couple of 500 titles this year. She's just missed out after a couple of tight opening sets in two 1,000 finals. Are we seeing a big title coming for her this year?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm the world's worst tipster, so don't rush out. But look, she's won Wimbledon. She has got a great game. When she is on, I mean, I think in the first three games of the first set against Azarenka, she was already into double figures for the number of winners she hit. And when you've got that sort of armory, and I know it's difficult to maintain that level, and she does dip a little bit, but there's going to be a period during this year, and hopefully for her, it'll be, you know, during one of the slams when it all comes together. And when it does, she is just about unstoppable. So yes, I do think there is another big title on the horizon for her.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, especially on grass, I do try and do some, try and do some predictions before each slam, try and do some kind of power rankings. And, you know, I'm looking at the data I'm gathering already, and I'm like, Rybakina is going to end up being probably at the top of it again, which is unsurprising. I mean, like, I picked her to win last year. It's going to take a lot for me not to back her to do really, really well at Wimbledon.
Just as we see a still of the conclusion of that match with Azarenka, I meant to double check this, but you'll know. I mean, how old is Victoria Azarenka now? Because it seems to me as though she's been playing since I was a child, and yet she has lost none of that competitive spirit. She's a proud mum as well. And while I'm convinced that Rybakina is going to win plenty more titles, I'm not saying that Azarenka will, but, you know, she still knocks on the door every now and then. I would love to see her go really deep at one of the slams as well. How old is she? I'm throwing you on under the bus.
Yeah. Well, you fortunately, we have a very, very good producer who is putting it on the screen for us right now.
Oh, yes.
Victoria Azarenka is 34. But yes, you're right. I mean, she's been a huge part of the tennis landscape, certainly for as long as I've been watching it. She's, I think, it's very interesting how this year so far, she's been in the mix. She's been getting deep in draws, maybe running into a bit of trouble when she's coming across the top players like Elena and Iga. But she's got this incredible, like, unbeaten record against Ostapenko. Like, those two played each other three times in the course of the first couple of months of the year. And she put Ostapenko away, despite the fact Ostapenko is very, very dangerous.
Best mates as well, of course, aren't they? They spend a lot of time together off the court.
yes. But I was actually thinking about it, because, like, if we came round to Azarenka, I did actually write a note of, could she be having a Dimitrov-esque renaissance at some point? You say maybe not titles. She hasn't won one since 2020, but why not? Why not, see if she can pick up a 500 or really push for another big final?
Well, you know what? And this is where the WTA is blessed. I mean, you touch upon Elena Ostapenko, who I've got a real soft spot for. I mean, I know that she really winds people up. I've spoken with Naomi Brody several times about their famous match a few years back when it all kicked off. And I remember actually watching her. I was lucky enough to be in Fort Worth for the WTA finals a couple of years ago. And Ostapenko, I think my memory's right that she got to certainly the semi-finals in the doubles, maybe even the final. But even when she's playing doubles, if her opponent does something wrong, she shows none of the respect that you normally expect. Oh, bad luck. She was shaking her head. She was looking at her coach, who's sitting next to her partner's coach as well. It's like, oh, come on, Eleni, you don't behave like that. But there's something about her that I just love watching. And it's the same with Azarenka. There was a time when, she was going back a few years when she used to have the headphones on and she didn't seem to engage. And I know she sounds a little bit like a cooing pigeon when she's playing, but I love her fight. And I was lucky enough to actually host a corporate event in Paris two or three years, actually probably longer ago than that now, with Victoria. And she was absolutely delightful. She spoke about how her grandmother in particular has molded her into the person that she is. Great friends with Serena Williams. She was planning to go out in Paris with Serena after that corporate night. There's a lot more to her, behind the scenes. She's very forceful in trying to improve the lot of her fellow professionals. I think she winds up the administrators at time because she's prepared to ask very difficult questions in pursuit of that. So, long may those players, and I know that by putting Azarenka and Ostapenko in the same bracket, that's wrong, because they're very, very different, but they shine a light on the women's game for different reasons, and all power to them because of that.
I mean, they are in the same category in that they're established Grand Slam champions, not anywhere near the same age. I think Ostapenko is going to be 27 this year. because it's coming up 7 years since she won the French. I think she was pretty young when she won that. But
well, here's a question for you. Do you think that Ostapenko can win another slam? I mean, when you've done it once, you can do it again. And, you know, a little bit like back, you know, when Ostapenko's game is really hot, she's a handful, isn't she?
This is a debate I end up having with other sort of pundits on this show sometimes. And I'm in the camp of yes. Yelena Ostapenko is someone who can win another Grand Slam. I don't see a reason why she can't have another 2 weeks where she's on fire, especially at Wimbledon. I think it's going to happen anywhere. Wimbledon's the most likely place because Ostapenko on grass is a combination that is to be feared. Having seen that at Birmingham, actually, I covered Birmingham on the ground last year for Talking Tennis, and watching Ostapenko then, like watching her live, is a whole different experience. But it was quite funny because I ended up being sat in the press seats, and they ended up being near someone who was there to support their partner, who was a line judge during the final against Krejcikova. And she was very much cheering against Ostapenko for fear of how she might react to a bad call from her partner.
Well, here we go. I think inadvertently we have already worked out that this year's Wimbledon final is going to be between Ostapenko and Rybakina. You heard it first, here, Nick.
Which we know how that's going to go, because that matchup, because I don't think Ostapenko's beaten Rybakina. They've played a few times and Rybakina's kind of dismissed her. So there we go. If you want to get your early bets in for that. I think whilst we're talking about the top players, let's do what I like to do during these shows is do a check-in on the state of play of the WTA Tour in terms of the rankings and sort of the current top four, which are Rybakina, Goff, Sabalenka, Świątek. I guess with Iga obviously losing to Alexandrova in the round of 16, how much of a surprise was that loss? Was this just not her event?
Yeah, listen, whenever Świątek loses, it's a surprise, but it does happen every now and then. I always, you know, I look at Iga Świątek, and I've been lucky enough to see her right from the very start of her career, and her success is quite extraordinary. You know, it doesn't need me to tell you what she's done at the very highest level. And yet, I always feel there is an element of fragility about her. And I do remember, we are now going back actually to the WTA finals in Guadalajara, so that's a fair while ago, and she's developed massively. But I remember she was really struggling, blustery conditions. We know it's tough in Mexico because of the altitude and all the rest of it. But she was actually crying at the back of the court a couple of times. And there's always that small feeling in the back of my mind that no matter how well she's playing, she might just, you know, stumble for no apparent reason at any given time. And therefore, when she does lose matches that she's expected to win, it doesn't come as big a surprise to me as perhaps it should. I still think she's a fantastic player. But yeah, there isn't the complete domination. When she's on, I mean, however many bagel set she's had over the past two or three years is absolutely ridiculous. When she's on top of an opponent, then okay, get the next players ready, because this match is not going to last long. But there does seem to be a slight lack of logic in that she can be dominant for very long periods of time, and then suddenly, she is human as well, it can unravel. So for that reason, and I didn't see all of the match as well, I need to preface that, but I saw bits of, you know, some of the highlights, and when I heard the result at the time, I wasn't poleaxed by it. I was surprised, but I'll never be totally poleaxed when Świątek loses, because there is, to me, just a hint of vulnerability, as wonderful, as dominant as she has been.
That's interesting. So again, I didn't see that match either. I usually watch every Iga Świątek match I can, but that was a time where it just wasn't really plausible for me to do. For what I can gather, Alexandrova hit her off the court. And we have to preface that with Alexandrova is a player who has given Iga Świątek problems before. I think there's only been one match of theirs where she failed to win a set against Iga, This is the first match where Alexandrova got the job done and won two sets. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she has been a thorn in Iga's side. It wasn't a it wasn't a massive surprise that opponent was going to cause her problems. Add to that Noshkova match that she had where she was up and then Noshkova came back and she kept allowing Noshkova back into it. And I was just feeling like she's not, that's going to be a real scrap if she's going to end up winning the title that way. So maybe she was going off the boil a little bit during that run. It's interesting that you say that. I think there has been some discussions around Świątek's potential fragility, but I don't think it comes out that often. I don't think she, but I do think that she also maybe has this reputation that she's expected to win everything and maybe she loses more than people expect. It's kind of the opposite end of the scale in some ways.
Well, yeah, and also, I mean, it's the way she plays. I mean, you know, when she hits that ball so early, so hard, it's and when it's on, it's this, how are you doing this? And you know, particularly in tricky conditions. I mean, I keep referring to WTA finals because I've been so lucky to go to the last three, and the one at the end of last year played in, you know, near gales and rain and all the rest of it.
Ah, the chaos in Cancun.
I mean, you know, purely from a very selfish point of view, that was one of the best weeks I have ever had covering tennis. I had in Cancun because, I mean, it was all laid on for us, lovely, you know, five-star hotel, all the rest of it, beautiful beach out the back of it. The tennis court was 5 minutes away. But to try and play tennis on what was effectively a hotel court as well, the bounces were awful. Everybody was struggling, except Świątek, who was still able to produce that high percentage gain to devastating effect. And, you know, she ran away with things in the end. So, you know, the way she does play, I think it allows her to have off days. And, you know, we kind of get, I think maybe because over the past few years, the likes of Serena have been so dominant on the women's side, we've become very accustomed to two or three men ruling the roost. It shouldn't be like that. You've got some fantastic players near the top of the game who have every right to beat the top player. So when the number one in the world or the number two in the world lose every now and then, it's come on, it's one against one. It's going to happen. And, you know, come the end of the year, I still think Świątek will be the player to pick up more titles than anybody else. So if you're an Iga fan, don't panic.
Definitely do not panic. I would agree with that as someone who's a big admirer of Świątek's game.
What a picture I'm now just seeing, actually, by the way. We've been treated, Nick, to golden memories of Tottenham winning trophies in years gone by. Then we've gone off a little bit of a detour, haven't we?
We have. This happens sometimes with the producer. I was doing a show that actually this show last week with a Liverpool fan, and suddenly the Manchester United Liverpool score from the FA Cup was coming up on the screen. as our producer is a Manchester United fan, and we have to navigate that sometimes.
Can I just say he's done very well to find Tottenham FA Cup celebrations, because it's embarrassing. We have to go back to 1991 for the last time Spurs won the FA Cup. But don't get me started on Tottenham's lack of silverware. I'll burst into tears.
We'll talk about football at some other point. Yes, I mean, look, you're representing Spurs here today, and that's something. No. Hey, maybe.
And we're doing all right. You know, I was there again on Saturday, Groundhog Day. We let the opposition score. We give them some hope. We all sort of get very raised blood pressure, but thankfully more often than not, we managed to come out on top in the end. It's fun. It is actually fun to watch. I must say it is fun to be a Spurs fan at the moment, and it hasn't been for the past two or three years.
Oh yeah. For as long as I know, I think Spurs, if you're a Spurs fan, you're having a good time, even if you have been waiting a while for some silverware. But hey, at least you're not a Newcastle United fan.
Mind you, what a game they had at the weekend.
Indeed. Anyway, we are going way off topic.
Yes,
here.
We are.
Way
we
off
are.
Topic.
Back to the tennis. Come on.
Back to the tennis.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. So obviously we mentioned Coco Gauff before as well, lost to Caroline Garcia, another potential opponent for Collins who didn't end up standing in her way. So far this season, Goff's kind of been in there, but possibly stuttering a bit this season after the Australian Open.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it was natural that we would all assume after New York that now she was going to go up another level, stay there, and become the dominant force. And how long have we banged on about, you know, areas in her game that have led to too many errors, be it, you know, the serve had some issues, the forehand was questionable, et cetera, et cetera. Listen, she's a fantastic player. She's still very young. She's also got the mantle weighing on her shoulder of now being a US Open champion. Everybody is gunning to beat her. I think it's natural that there'll be ups and downs in her journey over the next year, 2 years, whatever it may be. But I was talking about, you know, the pulling power of certain WTA performers. I just think that Coco Gauff is magnificent. And, you know, there was a danger, I thought, oh, when she burst onto the scene at Wimbledon was she a 15-year-old back in whenever it was? It was like, okay, this is great, but please, please don't overhype her. Don't put too many weights on her shoulders. She has dealt with it all. She is sensational when discussing anything, be it tennis or other issues that are going on in the world. I think she's absolutely fantastic. I love watching her play tennis, and I just don't want anybody, if she does have a little bit of an iffy run, maybe on the clay, although, you know, she's shown how well she can play on that surface too. Of course, she got to the final of both the singles and the doubles in Roland Garros a couple of years ago, and then had that weekend from hell. But please let us not over-focus on her results for now. Let's enjoy what she does. And she's here to stay for a very long time, and she's only going to get better and better and better.
Yeah, exactly. She's just turned 20. She's not even in the peak of her career yet. She's already got a Grand Slam and is showing a base level that beats pretty much anyone on any given day. Because she just fights it out. She scraps out. We saw that from her aged 15. And you know, we talk about her results, but you know. I admit I deliberately made that question a little bit kind of aggressive, but you know, I'm a big defender of Gauff, and you know, she's number five in the race at the minute, only a few points behind Zhang Qinwen, who is boosted quite substantially by the Australian Open final appearance. And when you look at sort of Gauff's performance sort of for the last sort of 9 months or so, she's losing less often than Rybakina and Sabalenka and winning more matches. So she's doing something right, regardless of how deep she may be going into tournaments at the minute. And we're going into clay, which is probably her strongest surface.
Well, yeah, I think it is probably, absolutely. So there's no reason why she will dip. But if she does, I just think, I mean, we're all, I guess it's part of the job. And for years, we've known in this country in particular, we like to raise people as high as possible and then have a lot of fun chopping them back down. I've always tried to avoid doing that. You know, her trajectory is absolutely spot on, as you've just demonstrated. So I don't think there's any problem there. I mean, the other interesting thing is you look at, you know, there are so many women who win their first Grand Slam title, and we know for all sorts of different reasons, perhaps then struggle to replicate that sort of success. It's been going on for years and years, and that's why there've been, you know, so many. I don't want to call them one-hit wonders, but players with one slam. Suddenly, everyone wants to beat you. I want to go out and beat the U.S. Open champion. I want to go and beat the French Open champion, whoever it might be. So it adds pressure. But she's a winner. She's winning titles. She wins more matches than she loses, and she does it with a grace, with a style. And you know, at 20 years of age, she can look forward to doing that for a very, very long time.
She is one of the biggest stars in tennis right now, and I expect that to go even bigger. I mean, it is interesting, you know, where since sort of Sky launched their UK coverage, she's basically been the poster girl for it, more or less. And she does have that recognizability factor because of that Wimbledon breakout run. There's something to it, and I think, you know, we've just got to be patient and allow the journey to continue. And I think I will kind of go on a little bit of a zigzag through the plan I had, but like when you were talking about people we like to raise up as high as possible and cut down, first player I thought of was Eba Raducanu.
Yes, and I knew we would come on to Raducanu, and
she didn't even play Miami. So
no, she didn't. And you know, you mentioned anyone now who mentions Raducanu's name, you know that you're going to get a reaction here because mm-hmm. you know, obviously for what she's done, she is the focal point of attention in this country. And the thing that kind of gets me a little bit, we know about the number of coaches that have come and gone, the injury problems, all the rest of it. I just don't think she helps herself with some of her PR. We talked about, you know, I just mentioned how good Goff is, whatever she's asked, you know, she is able to deal with it. Sometimes I just think Emma needs to be a bit careful in what she says. And equally, I think whatever she does say, people will take it out of context and are going to hammer her. And until she puts a run together, she's going to attract a lot of criticism. It's a really, really tough period for her. I really hope she puts a run together. I just worry because there's one physical issue after another. And, you know, you think, yeah, the start of this year, she's talking a good game. She's had time to recover from all the surgery. And yet one thing after another happens again, and that's why she didn't play in Miami. So the next few weeks, you know, she goes onto the clay. I hope she can put a run together. Otherwise, I fear come Wimbledon, and if she doesn't have a great stretch of results on the grass, it's going to get very, very uncomfortable for her.
Uncomfortable in what sense? In terms of coverage?
Or yes, yes.
Her own
coverage. I just think, you know, we said we put people up there, we'll chop them down. And I think that there are a lot of people who really don't like to see other people succeed. And so, you know, that what Raducanu did was unbelievable. And she's also enjoyed, you know, the benefits of success. But all the contracts, I don't blame her for that. I'd be the first person to do it myself. If I had a daughter who was winning, I would make sure that she backs that up as long as it's not affecting her tennis. But there are a lot of people out there who, I'm sorry to say, now want her to fail. And it's not just a personal thing against Raducanu. It's a feeling, oh yeah, you know, I don't really like what she's doing now. It's a little bit of a malaise. I don't know if it's a British disease, whether it happens elsewhere. But yeah, I hope she can get her head down. I hope she can play Fed Cup as well, by the way, and garner some good feelings both for herself and for her teammates in that regard. I think that's really important to actually try and represent your country whenever you can. Doesn't always happen. So huge few months coming up for her. And I really hope that physically she's in great shape. We know what a good player she is.
I was wondering actually whether this latest injury pullout was to do with actually trying to keep herself preserved to do Billie Jean King Cup, because she kind of needs to do it so she can play Olympics later
yes.
on, if you can get qualified.
Slap on the wrist for me. It's not the Fed Cup, of course, it's the Billie Jean King Cup.
I make that mistake all the time.
I know. It's a heck of a mouthful. Billie Jean, yeah, anyway. Yeah, look, and the other thing that some people have said to me in the past, oh, you know, she's a bit selfish. She's only doing what she wants to do. Like recently she was quoted as saying, you know, oh, playing Billie Jean King Cup would be good for me because it's you know, it's on clay. It's where I'm then going to go and compete on the tour. When you're a tennis player, you've got to be selfish to a degree. It's all about you at the end of the day, and you've got your team behind you, but you've got to make those difficult decisions that, again, we were talking about wanting players to turn up for every event. If it's not right for you, then you've got to make that decision. But going back to the PR side of things, you know, if she could play Billie Jean King Cup and the team can have some success, I think that would do her the power of good. And I hope that those around her sort of see that to a degree, because you do wonder, I mean, exactly who's pulling the strings, who's making the decisions, what is going on behind the scenes in the Raducanu camp.
And her making decisions that are best for her are she's no different to any other tennis player. Every tennis player does it. Some of them maybe not as open about it, but they do it.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we're getting some, that, like, we're talking about Raducanu and we're starting to get some people in the live chat for the live broadcast of this kind of coming in and making some comments. And, you know, I think it is to a certain degree, maybe there's some frustration from people who are maybe fans of other players or got frustrated with the coverage Radu Khanna received, where she was lauded as the new star of tennis. Like, she is going to be now at the top of the game forever. If she's like straight out the gate, this is how it's going to be. And sort of the expectation and the hype that got set. In many ways, maybe she was almost set up to fail in some ways. Although I think some of the things that have happened with the injuries didn't help. I do think Torben Belts was also the wrong coach for her. But that's just me spouting an opinion.
Well, and I think what you have to remember is nobody expected this to happen. I thought, I'll say it, and I know him, and so I don't want to let my personal feelings come into it. But I felt the biggest mistake they made was immediately after the US Open. To remove Andrew Richardson in the manner they did was just plain wrong. And I think I'm right in saying he was on a very, very limited contract at the time. He received no bonus, and it's not all about financial gain, but he received no bonus for guiding her to the US Open title. And I think that's really poor. And it made no sense at the time. And I understand that the theory in the Radu Khanna team is that, you know, we take the best out of one coach and then we move on to another and all the rest of it. Now, okay, there may be an element of sense in that to a degree, but when you've got a winning team together, particularly at that very early stage in her career, I just thought that was a huge mistake. And I don't think they've fully recovered from that, to be honest.
I think you do see it from every successful tennis player, male or female, that they have an established team around them to come around them and support them. And sometimes there'll be a change up sort of later on in their career, but that stability is kind of critical in a player's development.
Yeah, 100%. I feel sorry for everybody involved. It's funny to say feel sorry because she's just won the US Open. It's absolutely fantastic. But it was, my goodness, a couple of months ago, we were hacking around the place, you know, just trying to pick up a few results at a very modest level. Now I'm a US Open champion. I'm being offered this. I'm being offered that. It's what do I do? And who is guiding me? My dad's there. He's not exactly experienced enough to deal with this sort of situation. Okay, we'll bring on IMG. They're going to be brilliant with all the corporate sides of things. But you know, everybody realizes that if you ignore the reason for your success, i.e., your tennis, then it's all going to come crashing down. So it's been a huge learning curve. And then, of course, physical problems, and that's the real frustration, because if you're not 100% or close to it, then of course you're going to really struggle again at such a young age to deal with the very best.
This is a little bit of a tangent because I do have other questions, but something that I've been wondering, and this is very much a me thing, is we've seen Emma struggling physically, and we've seen our British male prospect Jack Draper struggling a lot with injuries. Is that a coincidence, or is there something going on behind the scenes around maybe the fitness and development of the younger players?
I can't really answer that because I'm not privy to what is going on in their particular camp. So I would say with Jack, by the way, I just think he's absolutely fantastic. Been very lucky to meet him a few times. He's got his head firmly on his shoulders. Some of the issues he's had have come in the furnace, be it Miami. Do you remember when he collapsed there a few years back? You know, and when you break onto the main tour and suddenly you're playing very, very long, very physical matches, and it is brand new to you, I think that can happen. It happened to Novak Djokovic a lot early in his career. He was having to put out a lot of matches, and no one ever questioned his fitness. It's just getting used to that sort of thing. And everyone's body is different. Some players are blessed. I mean, Roger Federer was blessed till the very end when his various parts of his body started to play out. You know what it's like. And others just have one issue after another. So I think it's very hard to generalize and say, oh, it's happened to those two Brits. There's something going wrong here. I think these are unique individual decisions. And I still think that Draper hopefully will be able to lessen those and continue his wonderful move up the rankings. With Radu Khanna, of course, when you've had as many problems as she did last year with the surgery, and then you come back and you're maybe pushing yourself, and then other parts of the body can be affected. I'm not an expert, but it's horribly frustrating, and I hope it's something that she is able to sort out sooner rather than later.
So I appreciate we're probably starting to get limited for time. So there's like two more points I want to make sure we cover, which is one of which is going to be Clay. But before we move on to Clay, let's talk about the actual British number one, Katie Bolter. Well, what a wonderful month she's had. San Diego champion, and then fourth round run at Indian Wells, which, you know, she was stopped by Azarenka, who was one of the form players, but actually she made a real contest of it in the first set. I mean, let's just talk about, like, Katie Bolter's really stepping up this year so far. First top five win against Pegula right at the start. You know, how positive can we be for Bolter? Is this something that she's going to be able to use to go onto grass, or is Clay going to get in the way a little bit?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how she fares on the clay. Can't wait to see her get into grass court action. I'm going to tell you something. This is an outlandish claim, but all the credit for Katie Bolter's success lies at the door of my son, Luca, who was one of her hitting partners on the grass last summer. And it's no coincidence that she went on to enjoy great success, having used him as a warm-up partner. So we're claiming all this credit. And because of that connection, we are massive Katie Bolter fans. And, you know, it's a great story. You know, the Dimonor connection as well means that the papers love it. And he's enjoying a lot of glory on the court as well. So I think it's so exciting to see her play the way she is, to deal again with the spotlight. And I think that comes naturally to her, and she's got a real charm and an easygoing nature. I'm not sure what to expect from her on the clay, but I think, you know, given fair speed and her body staying fit, she could really make a name for herself on the grass come the summer. It's going to be a lot of fun. So all power to Bolter, but, you know, she'll be the first to say that it's young Luca really who is responsible for this magnificent surge up the rankings.
I'm very excited about Katie Bolter coming up. I think I actually thought she might make the Miami final. It was just Azarenka who had a very, very good day. I'm also very excited to hear about Luca. how's his journey going at the minute? And our producer wants to know, is there any Modric link?
There is no Modric link. No, my wife and I fought for weeks before he was born. We're lucky to have two great boys. The older one, Jago, good tennis player as well. We just couldn't agree names. And eventually, Jago, we settled on Jago, which is sort of a Cornish derivation of Jack, I think. And we like that. And Luca, yeah, no, not Modric, although I loved him. No real Italian in us. It was just the name that we liked. And bizarrely, I mean, there are so many Lucas now. When he went to school, he had to be called Luca B because there was a Luca L, a Luca C, a Luca D, E, F, G. I mean, it's just become very, very popular. But he got to, I won't bore you too much with the details, but he got to the last round of qualifying for Junior Wimbledon last year, and he had a tough match against the guy whose name I can't remember now, but top 10 in the juniors this year. Luca's a bit unlucky because he's a November boy, so he missed out by 6 or 7 weeks on having another year as a junior this year. But he's off to America. He's got a very good tennis scholarship to a top university in California. So he's heading there in the summer, but he's hoping to practice with Bolter again or to hit with her. What I want to say actually about the British setup as well is how good they are in bringing the youngsters of the game into direct contact with some of the established stars. And Luca's been lucky. He's hit with Andy Murray. He was hitting with Carl Edmund a couple of weeks ago, and he said, "My goodness, Dad, until you actually are on the receiving end of that forehand, you just do not realize how hard he hits the ball." But it's a fantastic experience, and it's not just Luca. A lot of the juniors are rubbing shoulders with the best players in the country now, which is absolutely fantastic. He's loving. He's having to do his A levels at the moment, which is also difficult. It's a difficult combination, but once he gets those out of the way, he'll be there. Surbiton, Wimbledon, Queens, wherever, hoping to make a little bit of an impact in the British players' success.
All right, well, keep an eye out for Luca Buckland trying to come through for those tournaments and follow his college tennis journey, try and follow the likes of other players who've actually managed to build some success off that route.
Yeah.
Let's look ahead a little bit. Let's just use the last couple of minutes or so to look ahead, because we are now in clay season. Mm-hmm. We won't necessarily do a detailed preview of Charleston or Bogota, although those are the taunts that are getting underway today. I'm very excited about Charleston. I absolutely love watching that tournament.
And can I just say it's probably the number one tournament that I haven't been to that I would like to go to, because everybody, when I, you know, I was in Miami a few times and the Americans in particular, oh, we're off to Charleston. I said, oh, it is fantastic. It is run beautifully. It's an amazing club. And a lot of people come up to me and say, oh, where should you go? Where's the best event? And you tend to think either the Slams or the Masters. But if you're just going one level below that, I think Charleston is a place you should definitely put down as a potential must-see experience.
Do you know, I've watched it the last couple of years. And I'm like, actually, yeah, I would love to go visit sometime. It looks absolutely spectacular. You can tell it's heritage, former WTA 1000 event. Obviously, it wasn't the one, it weren't called that back then, but it was one of the big events in the past. And you can see that legacy still there, including with the field they can get, which is incredible. Like the field they've got this year, okay, they don't have the top four in the world, but they've still got a damn good field. What kind of stories are we going to be keeping an eye on during the clay season, which I'm assuming you're going to be paying close attention to? Are you still doing Radio Roland Garros this year?
Yes, I am. I will be heading off to Paris. It's I have to say, two of my favorite weeks of the year, as long as the sun shines. I mean, when the sun shines in Paris, it's fantastic. When it rains and it's cold, and of course, we had the COVID Paris as well 3 or 4 years ago. What a surreal experience that was, having to get blankets out and, you know, watching outdoor tennis in the freezing Parisian cold in October. But I mean, Roland Garros has been transformed. First went there, you know, I'm old now, but a long, long time ago. I think they have done a magnificent job. For me, when I first started playing, it was the worst slam by a mile in terms of the facilities, and it always seemed to rain back then. I love it. And you know, I quite like the unpredictability of the surface as well. I never quite know. Obviously, on the men's side, for donkey's years, we've known that Rafa's going to rule the roost, and it became a little bit predictable for a time. And then I love the fact that Andy Murray suddenly found a way to play on that surface and had some fantastic success too. You guaranteed stories. I'd like to be able to say, oh, she's going to win this, she's going to do that. I don't know the latest here with Aryna Sabalenka, for example, because of everything that's been going on. Do you know what her schedule is over the next few weeks?
So obviously we didn't get, I was going to do a full sort of top four rundown. I was worried about time, but yeah, Sabalenka, obviously her run in Miami was kind of affected by what's happened. Her schedule is, she's going to play Stuttgart. So that's a couple of weeks time, then Madrid, Rome, week off Roland Garros. So do kind of like, and if you look at Stuttgart, actually that's stacked. That's pretty much most of the top 16 are going to that tournament, with a few exceptions of like some wild cards, like I think Kerber and Raducanu have got wild cards to that tournament. But yeah, so that's Sabalenka's schedule. And yeah, obviously, I think that her kind of dispelling how much what's happened is going to affect her is going to be a big part of the clay season story. Obviously, how well Świątek does on clay. We're expecting her to win everything. She didn't last year, though. Only won Stuttgart, but you know, can she build up a clay momentum to head into Roland Garros? What can Goff do? For me, those are going to be the kind of narratives we'll be keeping an eye on to set up what's happening when Roland Garros comes around in a couple of months' time, because that's still a while away. It's still a lot of tennis to be played.
But what I like about the clay as well is that, yeah, you mentioned the usual suspects, but then someone like a Krejcikova from a few years back goes and just blows everybody away during her fantastic fortnight. Somebody always appears who you're not expecting. And another player I'd like, we haven't mentioned her, but you know, she had a British coach for a very long time, and I'm glad she's had some good results again. And she's just about my favourite player, and she can play on every surface, and that's Maria Sakkari. I really hope that she's in the narrative on a regular basis over the next couple of months.
Sakkari's Sunshine double was actually really impressive. Final and quarterfinal, and only losing to the top four. Yeah, she's kind of positioning herself to maybe take over Pegula's spot as best of the rest right now. I think she's looking very good going into Charleston.
Yeah. Great to see her back. And she's such a lovely person as well. And she's had so many frustrations, and she's come so close. We know how many semi-finals she's lost and all the rest of it. And she had a great partnership with Tom Hill for a very long time. And I'd love to see Maria Sakkari win a Grand Slam.
That would be cool. That would dispel a lot of doubters, because we, again, do a lot of content on this channel. And one of the topics that always comes up is, where's Maria Sakkari at? Mm. And it would be nice to say good things about Maria Sakkari.
Well, the one thing about Maria Sakkari is that you will not guarantee that she's going to win a slam until she has literally won the last point of the final, because things tend to happen, don't they?
Do you know what? That 2021, she was so close. Like, if she converted that match point against Krejcikova, she probably would have won that final against Pavlyuchenkova, because it would have, maybe we would have been some nerves, but Pavlyuchenkova's fitness faded during that match against Krejcikova. Not saying anything over Krejcikova, who was the star of that year. But we're looking like way back now. Marcus, you've been so generous with your time. Thank you for coming on and talking.
Pleasure.
All the WTA tennis. Hope to have you back. So can I say
one last thing, which is, it's not WTA connected, but I'm excited because I'm writing my first ever book, and this will attract older listeners stroke viewers. But those of you who remember Roger Taylor, the British number one, who made three Wimbledon semi-finals back in the day, I'm writing his autobiography. If anybody has any memories, any stories, anything they think might be of relevance to the book, which hopefully will be published just before Wimbledon next year, then you've got my my Twitter address. Do drop me a line. I'd love to hear any little stories, if you've met the guy or remember a match he played in, anything like that.
Producer, if we could put Marcus's Twitter on the screen, that'd be great, because obviously always worth following Marcus anyway.
But Roger's wife, Alison, who is a wonderful player in her own right and a top coach, and who sort of formed Hannah Klugman, who we all know is doing amazing things on the junior tour. There's Rog, what a player he was. He's tennis obsessed to this. He's just the wrong side of 80 now, but whenever I go around, they've got the tennis on. And Alison has, as I mentioned, played a big role in Hannah Klugman's development, and they are so excited about what she is going to do over the course of the next few years.
I have definitely been hearing lots of good things about Hannah Klugman, Isabel Lacey as well.
Yes, absolutely. There's a few.
There's a couple of really strong names, the British names, that maybe we'll be talking about WTA Weekly in future years. Hopefully we last that long. And by the way, Roger Taylor, obviously, yeah, no surprise. Not old enough to have watched him play, but I know his legend.
I am not old enough to have watched him play either, I hasten to add, but he's still in good nick, and he's got a heck of a story, because he was at the centre of the Wimbledon boycott of 73. If you have a moment, don't go and read up on that. There were all sorts of things happening as tennis went open back in the late 60s, and then had some turbulent things to deal with in the 70s as well. Hmm.
Yeah, I mainly know him from his Wimbledon results. So obviously beating Rod Laver and ending that title defence in 1970.
Yes.
That semi-final with Jan Kodesh in 73, where arguably he was so close to ending that Fred Perry drought.
Do you know what happened in that? Because it was final set, and it was 5-4 Taylor on going with serve when they had to go off court because of the rain, and he had to hang around in the locker room for ages. Lost focus, came back out, didn't think they'd come back out that day. It was still wet, half the crowd had gone home, and he lost three games in the blink of an eye. And had he won that semi, he would have been a hot favourite to win the final as well. And, you know, if you become a Wimbledon champion, your life changes forever. Ifs and buts and maybes, but he still had a terrific career.
That sounds like a lot like what happened with the Hedman Ivanisevic semi-final.
Very much, yes.
Yeah, well, this is not a tennis history podcast, much as I wish it was, because I would have a field day with that. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on, Marcus. It's been a
pleasure.
Brilliant. Yeah, hope, and I will definitely pick up that book when it comes out. And I'm definitely going to be listening to, I just want to say also, you know, not to, you know, inflate your ego too much, but thanks so much for all the work you do with the guys at Radio Roland Garros. Absolute lifesaver for me over the years listening to that when I'm working. Absolutely love the coverage there. And I'm assuming you're going to be doing Radio Wimbledon as well again.
Yes, I am. And as I say, I mean, working in Paris with the likes of Gigi and the team there is superb. And then we have a huge cast at Wimbledon, which yeah, is a blast from start to finish.
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to be listening to that. Big fan of sort of the radio coverage that gets produced. So highly recommend to anyone who may not be able to watch the matches. Definitely go check those out. So I'll leave you to get started with your clay court prep. Thanks very much, Marcus.
And, thank you, guys. Thank you.
All right. And to all of you, thanks for watching. We'll be back with WTA Weekly next week to wrap up everything that's happened in Charleston and look ahead to the Billie Jean King Cup. Tune in later today for ATP Weekly and keep an eye on the channel for all the updates coming from ATP and Estoril. We'll probably bring you some other match updates as well. But until next time, take care and keep talking tennis.
If you enjoyed this video, make sure you hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and click that notification bell so you don't miss out on all things tennis.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.